read this a couple times, because we read in the Old Testament, we often see the things that God is very patient with them about, year after year, time after time, they rebel against what he says. Always do these things bad. But he always comes back and forgives them. But every once in a while, we see God say, that's enough. I'm like he said in the book of Numbers, I'm not going to let you go into Canaan. This generation will not go in. We see that occasionally. We see that even happen with Aaron, even Moses. When something bad happens, we saw this with the king. The Israel demanded a king. They wanted a king. It was bad for them. They insisted on it. God says, okay, I'm going to let you have it. What had they done to bring God to that decision?
They turned them to themselves, their heart to themselves, not to God.
Yeah. They hardened their heart to God. They hardened their heart to God. The generation in Numbers just said, we're not going to do this your way. Not because it was the first time they said that. They said that hundreds of times before that. That's that many hundreds of times before that. We don't want to do it God's way. We want to go back to Egypt. We want meat. We want bread. We want water. What's the matter with all these things God's not giving us? But that day, they hardened their heart. That was the mistake they made. It's not a question of breaking the wrong rule, disobeying the wrong rule. There's special rules that really mean a lot to God. Our phantom image of there's a unforgivable sin. There's no such thing as an unforgivable sin. When we harden our hearts, though, that requires God. He's just going to have to let us go on our own, because it doesn't have anything else he can do with us when our heart is hard. Read Psalm 95. Tanya, you could read verse 6 to 8.
Okay. Come, let us bow down and worship. Let us kneel before the Lord, our Maker. For he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care. Today, if only you would hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as you did in Meribah, as you did that day at Massah in the wilderness.
Thank you. This is reminding them, what does God want to be for them? That's right. How does it describe him just before the warning about not hardening their hearts? How does it describe God?
Our Maker.
And we're the people of his pasture. What does that make him?
A shepherd.
Our shepherd. What does he want to make us?
His flock.
The flock under his care. He wants to take care of us with a lot of kindness, a lot of sensitivity, a lot of gentleness. That's always what he wants to do. We can't get there because we've done the right things, proven our worth to him, because he just likes us. He just cares about us. This loves us. Always is saying, if you just soften your heart, listen to my voice, don't harden your hearts, and you and me will be together. That's the way it goes. And it says, just don't harden your hearts. That day as you did Meribah in the wilderness, when they timed their hearts hardened, they rejected not only God, as I said, they rejected Moses and Aaron. They turned against Moses and Aaron. They turned against those two men who had faithfully given their lives to them. They hardened their hearts not only against God, but Moses and Aaron, the few people who were faithful to God. And Moses himself had the sense, I see why we're going to have to almost start over here. Was that what God was saying? Was it because they'd broken one too many rules? They didn't break an unforgivable sin. They had just hardened their hearts. God said, I can't do anything with them now. I'm going to have to let them go their own way. I'm going to have to rebuild a new generation. Hardening the heart is always the caution God gives us. As long as we remember that, it's a reassurance. It's going to be okay between you and me.
It's not really that hard, is it?
It shouldn't be, should it?
No. What do you mean?
The thing we get caught up in, because we're worried about appearances, worried about what we look like on the outside, worried about proving something to God, showing him the things we've done, the things we've learned, our abilities. It's never been about that between us and God. Just wants our soft hearts to mold them. He can do much better things with a soft heart our own human abilities, our own human talents, our own human deeds. Always been about God just wanting our hearts to be soft. Let him do something much better than we could do on our own. Do you have a question, Jen? Yeah.
And a person coming hard and then you go to God, talk to him about it, and we can talk to him.
Yeah. That's a very good way of putting it into perspective, as Norma said, really isn't that complicated. Just instead of worrying about am I doing enough, do I know enough, instead of actually that, just say, am I keeping my heart soft to God? Am I keeping my heart open? That's a different question to ask. That will keep you from being led astray. That's a very good way to think about it. Just remind ourselves, just have to keep my heart soft, have to keep it open to God, whatever he tells me. I know I'll still misunderstand what he tells me a lot of the time. I'll still mess things up. But as long as I keep my heart soft, it'll be okay between me and God. Might not look so good to other people, but it'll still look good to God if my heart is soft. That's a good way of putting it. Okay, let's pick up now with Deuteronomy chapter 29. It talks about they're going to be taken into this covenant. He says a number of things. He says, you're standing here today to enter in a covenant with the Lord your God. He says, you are standing here, and those who also are not standing here. We're going to do this to help you understand what God is doing with you. God is always making a covenant with everyone. Everyone who seeks him for the heart, he makes a covenant with them. Not about whether those around you are doing it or not, just between you and God. Let's we'll just read some of this. Picking up in Deuteronomy 29, Dot, can you read verses 2 to 6?
2 to 6? Moses summoned all the Israelites and said to them, your eyes have seen all that the Lord did in Egypt to Pharaoh, to all his officials, and to all his land. With your own eyes, you saw those great trials, those miraculous signs, and great wonders. But to this day, the Lord has not given you a mind that understands, or eyes that see, or ears that hear. During the 40 years that I've led you through the desert, your clothes did not wear out, nor did the sandals on your feet. You ate no bread and drank no wine or other fermented drink. I did this so that you might know that I am the Lord your God.
He says, I've done all these things, all these great signs and great wonders. For what purpose? You know that I'm the Lord your God. He showed him many great signs and great wonders. And he says, I showed you your clothes didn't wear out, the sandals did on your feet didn't wear out, did all these things, giving you manna from above, all these blessings I gave you. We've seen great signs and great wonders too. Of course, in the New Testament, we read up Jesus' miracles, but we see even greater signs and wonders than those two. So just telling you these things so you understand this is the person you're making your covenant with, the God who made you, the God who wants to make you the flock of his flock, wants us to be a shepherd. So remind, this is what God has always called us to be this for him. Take a look at Luke 23. This is scripture about the things that we've seen great signs and great wonders at the cross. Much deeper signs, much deeper wonders, not only on the surface, but beneath the surface too. Nancy, do you have Luke 23? That's okay. You have it, Frank?
Okay, what verse?
Verse 44 to 49.
An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him.
On Luke 23?
23. verse again was?
44 to 49.
And it was now about the sixth hour, and darkness came over the whole land until the ninth hour. For the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." When he had said this, he breathed his last. The centurion, seeing what had happened, praised God and said, "Surely this was a righteous man." And all the people who had gathered to witness this sight saw what took place. They beat their breasts and went away. But all those who knew him, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance watching these things.
On the surface, looks like a pretty dramatic event, doesn't it? What's going on?
Jesus is dying.
Jesus is dying. He's breathing his last, giving his spirit into God's hands. What else is happening?
The curtain's being torn.
The curtain of the temple is torn in two.
The significance is we can enter the Holy of Holies.
What's the other outward thing?
It's dark.
It's dark at noon. Dark in the morning, from morning to from noon till 3 in the afternoon. This mysterious darkness came over everything. The curtain of the temple is ripped in two. And what does a hardened centurion say when he sees this? This guy was something kind of special here. Now, we haven't seen that with our eyes, but what have we seen if we let God open our eyes of our hearts? What have we seen? What have we seen that tells us the curtain of the temple has been torn?
That we can approach God.
We've seen God did that beautiful miracle, tore the curtain of the temple open. We now can walk into God's holy presence. We've seen that. It's a great sign. It's a wonderful sign. What about this darkness at noon? What have we seen about that?
Well, Christ is our light now. The light comes from Christ. We walk in the light.
As we read in Isaiah, you don't need the moon anymore. You don't need the sun anymore. You're going to have Jesus. There's a little twist to it also, though, because instead of seeing light at midnight, which would be an appropriate sign, why do they see darkness at noon? What's it telling us what's happening?
It's the power of God. God
did. It doesn't say it's God power. What does it say symbolically to us? See darkness at noon.
It's going to be very different than what you expect.
Actually, a good way of putting it, too. Sure, good way of putting it.
We see the light of God through our own darkness.
Another good way of putting it, John?
The light is
Why is the light going out for a moment? Jesus dying. What was Jesus doing when he passed away? What was he doing?
He was dying for us.
He is carrying all our sins. He was being a curse for us, carrying all the sins we had to bear ourselves, taking that darkness off of our hearts, taking that evil off of our hearts, taking all our dark deeds, our dark thoughts, our dark words, taking them on himself. And as John said, for a moment, the light was disappearing. Jesus bore that all in his heart. This is just a somber recognition by God's hand. This is what's happening. And it's there for those of you who let him open the eyes of your heart to see what is really happening in this world. Really momentous occasion, far deeper than the outward things. And it says, as we read back in Deuteronomy, remember what it said that God needs to do for us to see these signs and wonders? Take a look at verse 4. What do we need God to do for us?
He's not given us a mind that understands.
Yeah. He said, you saw all these things, but it's not going to do any good for you unless, what does God do for us? Give us a mind that understands. We have to look at it from a spiritual point of view. And that's what he's calling us to do. We're going to take a look at a couple of New Testament scriptures again. Linda in the back there, can you read, look up Romans 12 for us. Then Linda over here, look up Ephesians 1. And we'll get to them in a moment. This is what he's telling us. The things we see, the facts we learn, the words we memorize in the scriptures, They don't mean anything to us unless we look at them for a spiritual point of view. And we can't do that by our own logic nor our own philosophy. Our logic cannot figure out the things we see God doing for us. Our philosophy cannot make sense of them. The things God does, His ways are much higher than our ways. Not just because He has better information, but because a very different way of looking at things. Always have to look beyond the surfaces. Linda, could you read Romans 12, verse 2, and then Linda, Ephesians 1, verse 18.
I pray also that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened, in order that you may know the hope to which He has called you, the riches of His glorious inheritance, and the saints.
He says in Romans 12, if you let God transform your mind, let him take over your mind, what does it do for us? In that verse, when we let God transform our mind, helps us to be able to see something about God.
His will for us.
His will is what?
It's good,
good, pleasing, and perfect. If you look at what God does with human eyes, it's not going to look good and pleasing and perfect. Mm-hmm. His ways are much different from ours. Have to let Him open the eyes of our hearts, as we just read. We can't look at things with our own human logic, nor with our human philosophies, nor any other branch of human learning. We'll never make any sense of it. Have to let God show us, this is the way I look at things. I want everybody to come to me. I want to give everybody every chance that they can have to come to me. I know it will look bad to you, but it looks beautiful to me. You're giving everyone these chances. If they harden their hearts, I have to let them go off on their own. They soften their hearts, I can speak to them. Often very slowly, very carefully. It's going to take them forever to come to see what I'm saying, but as long as I have a little bit of their heart to work with, I'm going to do that. I know it looks bad to you, but it looks beautiful to me. I don't want you to worry about the outward appearances. Don't want you to seek the way to look things in this world. It doesn't mean anything to me. Just let me into your hearts. That's always been what I've been about. That way says, I have to let you see things from my point of view. Other people will think things that look great, they really are things I don't care about. You see things that I think are bad, they're things that might look beautiful to me. Always, He's always reminding us those things. Great.
Oh, I don't think you do. The reason why He says that is He knows how the world was created. You know, He knows what's really good and what's not good.
Yes.
It's not an arbitrary thing.
Yes. Just so we are saying that the blessings and the curses, they're not arbitrary
punishment,
arbitrary rewards. Just things that are meant to tell us what it takes to come close to God. Always what he wants. Go ahead, Norma.
I'm thinking it was the eyes of your heart, not your physical eyes. So this has to be done a different way.
Yes.
We don't see it.
That's right.
We have to feel it. We have to be in our heart.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's getting at. Because it's not literalized in our heart. We don't have any.
No.
Our heart sees things, though. Our heart senses things. Our heart understands the things God tells us in a way that our human minds and our human eyes can't process on their own. That's a good way of putting it. So when we come to what he says next, when he says you're standing here to enter into covenant. Not going to read the rest of the chapter. We'll just pick up some excerpts. So pick up in verse 12. Back in Deuteronomy 29, can you read verses 12 through 18? And then Phil, after that, hold it in reserve. We'll come back to it in a minute. Read. Just pick out verses 19 and 23. You'll see why I gave you verse 23. Hold them for a little bit, though. After Don reads, want to take a look at a couple things.
Deuteronomy 29, 12 through 18.
Yes.
that you may enter into the covenant with the Lord your God, and into his oath which the Lord your God has made with you today, in order that he may establish you today, and that he may be your God, just as he spoke to you, and as he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I am not with you alone when I make you this covenant with you, but both with those who stand here with us today in the presence of the Lord our God, and with those who are not with us here today. For you know how we lived in the land of Egypt, and how we came through the midst of the nations 10 years you passed. Moreover, you have seen their abominations and their idols of wood, stone, silver, and gold,
which they had with them, so that there will not be among you a man or woman or family or tribe whose heart turns away today from the Lord your God to go and serve the gods of those nations, that there will not be among you a root bearing poisonous fruit and wormwood.
Thank you. These are things he says about this covenant that we're entering into. You're standing here to enter into a covenant. It's not just with you, it's with you and who else?
Other people. Those who are not here today.
Yeah, everyone who seeks God from their heart, as we read in Acts 2, for everyone who calls on his name, anytime, any place, whoever calls on his name will make his covenant with them. He's not making the covenant with the nation of Israel. He's making it with everyone who wants to seek him, who calls themselves Israel. He's making this covenant with them. Is entering with each of us personally, because he wants each of us to be gathered into this flock, to be our shepherd. The covenant is not a legal agreement. It's not something we can understand by the terms of law, the terms of science, the terms of logic. It's a living covenant. The covenant goes much deeper. Even in this time, was meant to be a personal covenant, living covenant between that person and God. Even more so now, take a look at Isaiah chapter 42. Read something he says about the covenant that he wants us to have. A covenant with the people. A covenant will be have life in it. Kate, can you read Isaiah 42 verses 6 and 7 for us?
I, Lord, have called you to demonstrate my righteousness.
He says, I'm going to make you a covenant for the people. I'm going to make you what? I'm going to make you a covenant. Not going to make a covenant with you, but make you what? You're going to be my covenant. Because it's going to be a living covenant. People will see the light I shine on you. They'll hear the words you speak. It will encourage them to seek the light for themselves. That's all about them seeking the light. My covenant is going to live through you. As we were talking about a short while ago, what it means to have God's name written on our foreheads. Not a literal sign, not an outward thing. We'll be a light for those around us, to encourage them to let God open their blind eyes. Encourage them to let God release them from the dungeon, from the chains of this world. That's a living covenant he wants to make with us. And at the end of this passage that Don read, it gives us one of these constant warnings, cautions, what he says. Make sure that what doesn't happen. In verse 18.
You go after idols.
Yeah, that's how he describes this. Make sure that no one's heart turns away from the Lord. This is something we see over and over again. Make sure you don't harden your heart. Don't let your heart be turned away to these idols. How does it describe these idols? It says at the end of the verse, it says something interesting.
Mine says bitter, produce a bitter root.
A bitter root, bitter poison, something would contaminate other people around you. That this phrase might seem familiar if you remember what it says in Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12 says that verse 15. See to it that no one falls short of the grace of God, and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. Then he says something about this, what this bitter root means. See that no one is godless like Esau, who for a single meal sold his inheritance rights as the oldest son. What did Esau do?
He was hungry, so he turned his heart from him.
What does that mean in a spiritual sense?
He turned his heart away from God.
He turned away his heart from the blessings God wanted to give him and exchange it for something to satisfy his stomach. Instead of satisfying his soul, satisfying the needs of the spirit in his heart, he said, I'd rather have something that will please my stomach. What does that say about him? He was godless. When he wanted to inherit his blessing, he had to be rejected. He sought the blessing, but he didn't want it. God gave him what he asked for. Asked for a bowl of soup. That's what you want? Please your stomach instead of having you satisfy your heart? What we just say? What does God have to say? Okay, you'll get it. And that's the thing he says, don't become godless like this. As we come back to Deuteronomy 19, don't let this bitter root take root in you. Keep this bitter root out. There's always God's very patient reminder to us, just don't turn away to these idols. They're not going to satisfy you. So, Phil, can you go ahead and read verses 19 and verse 23?
When such a person hears the words of this oath, he invokes a blessing on himself, and therefore thinks, I'll be safe, even though I persist in going my own way. This will bring disaster on the watered land as well as the dry. 23. The whole land will be a burning waste of salt and sulfur. Nothing planted, nothing sprouting, no vegetation growing on it. It will be like the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboam, which the Lord overthrew in fierce anger.
He says, just as my reminder, this is what happens if you don't follow in my path. Your land will be a burning waste of salt and sulfur. So nothing planted, nothing sprouting. Is that a warning? If you go astray, I'm going to strike your land, burn all your buildings down, burn all your crops down, or does it say something deeper?
Spiritual.
Go ahead.
I'm thinking that even though it could be a magnificent, beautiful garden, you have no appreciation for it. You're just, you know, no sense of contentment. You just churn. You don't have any sense of peace.
Yes. You won't be able to be contented with the things you have. And this is where your spirit will be like, a burning waste of salt and sulfur. Even when you're having the things outwardly you want, your spirit can't produce anything on its own. It says nothing planted, nothing sprouting, no vegetation growing on it. Not anything sprouting spiritually. Your heart can't generate anything on its own. Have to let God take your heart. You can't produce things of your own, not any spiritual benefits. Something we read a lot in Isaiah, God plants his garden in our hearts for his own splendor, because only he can get the glory for the things his hands do. Just a reminder, it says at the end of the chapter, the secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us, that we may follow all the words of this law. God has revealed these secret things, as Paul often calls it in the New Testament, a mystery. Reveals a mystery to us. This is a mystery of what God has always been doing. Always ready to give us all the grace we need if we just ask for it, just seek Him from our heart. Let's take a couple minutes, read the Deuteronomy 30. We won't have the time to cover it too much, but it does say a lot of things that is encouraging too. Tanya, do you have a Deuteronomy 30 there? Why don't you read verses 1 to 6. Can you read the first 10 verses? You have it, read the whole thing. Yeah.
When all these blessings and curses I have set before you come on you and you take them to heart, wherever the Lord your God dispenses you among the nations, and when you and your children return to the Lord your God and obey him with all your heart and with all your soul, according to everything I command you today. Then the Lord your God will restore your fortunes and have compassion on you and gather you again from all the nations where he scattered you. Even if you have been banished to the most distant land under the heavens, from there the Lord your God will gather you and bring you back. He will bring you to the land that belonged to your ancestors, and you will take possession of it. He will make you more prosperous and numerous than your ancestors. The Lord your God will circumcise your hearts and the hearts of your descendants, so that you may love him with all your heart and with all your soul and live.
That's good, Tanya. That's thanks for reading that. That makes the main ideas here, because he's saying that when we have gone astray, he says, I'm dispersing you among the nations. That happened in the physical history of Israel, sent them, dispersed them among the nations, going to captivity. But even today, when our hearts stray after the idols of this world, we're dispersed among the nations, blending in with them, becoming like them. We'll want to be like the other nations, as we read in the Book of Kings. These things when we want them for ourselves. And it's the thing he says, you'll be dispersed among the nations, but when you call on God's name, what will happen?
He will bring you back.
He'll bring us back. He'll gather us back. He's always been waiting. The whole time, our hearts strayed far from him, has always been waiting for us coming back. Doesn't matter to what distant land you have strayed, restore us from captivity. We strayed maybe not in physical nations, but you've strayed in the worshiping the idol of the world's possessions, straying after the world's idol of proving ourselves, world's ambitions, the world's futile thinking, all the things the world can draw astray into. And he says, the Lord will circumcise your hearts and the hearts of your descendants. This idea should be familiar if you remember your Book of Romans. Book of Romans tells us God was never asked them to circumcise their flesh. Always it was asked them really to circumcise their hearts. It was always what God was talking about. Didn't really mean the fleshly activities, the appearances never really meant anything to God. It was always let him circumcise your flesh. And as it says in verse 9, the Lord will again delight in you and make you prosperous. Not prosperous outwardly, but prosperous spiritually. He'll make our spirits flourish again. He'll turn our spirits back into a spiritual garden instead of a burning waste of sulfur and salt. Isaiah 57, don't have time to read it, but take a look at that scripture sometimes. It says, God delights in someone who seeks him with a humble and contrite heart. I'm not going to read the other scriptures too. Good ones, if you have a chance, you could look them up on your own. I'm going to finish up by reading Psalm 107, though. Psalm 107 talks about all the nations that God redeems us from. Not the physical nations, but all the places we stray. We have a tendency to stray in so many spiritual nations to lead us far from God. And God is always near, waiting for us to call out to him. We stray into the deserts of the world's emptiness, that's empty things. We stray into the interchange, get into chains of darkness, chains of sin, chains of futility. We stray in our rebellious ways, our foolish decisions to try to prove ourselves to God. We stray into depending on appearances, trying to make ourselves look good outwardly to God and get hardening our hearts to him instead of giving our hearts to him. It says, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love endures forever. Let the redeemed of the Lord tell their story. Those he redeemed from the hand of the foe, those he gathered from the lands, from east and west, from north and south. It goes on not to tell us all the different physical places, but all the lands they strayed into, their spiritual places, the spiritual troubles they got themselves into. Some wandered in desert wastelands, finding no way to a city where they could settle. They were hungry and thirsty, and their lives ebbed away. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he delivered them from their distress. He led them by a straight way to a city where they could settle. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his unfailing love and his wonderful deeds for mankind. For he satisfies the thirsty and fills the hungry with good things. Some sat in darkness, in utter darkness, prisoners suffering in iron chains because they rebelled against God's commands and despised the plans of the Most High. So he had subjected them to bitter labor. They stumbled, and there was no one to help. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he saved them from their distress. He brought them out of darkness, the utter darkness, and broke away their chains. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his unfailing love and his wonderful deeds for mankind. For he breaks down gates of bronze and cuts through bars of iron. Some became fools for their rebellious ways and suffered affliction because of their iniquities. They loathed all food and drew near the gates of death. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he saved them from their distress. He sent out his word and healed them, rescued them from the grave. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his unfailing love and his wonderful deeds for mankind. Let them sacrifice thank offerings and tell his works with songs of joy. I don't have time to read the rest of it. Give some thought to what he's saying here. Give a thought to what he says about these stories of the redeemed, all the places he redeems people from. Tells us what God's heart is like. He understands his sheep. He knows his sheep. He knows what we're like. He knows how easy it is for us to stray. He has always been waiting patiently just for us to cry out to him from our hearts, calling his name for your spirit. He'll be there for you when you need his grace. The heart of God is a beautiful thing in the eyes of our hearts, no matter what it looks like the outward wise. Thank you for your patient attention. We'll pick up in the middle of chapter 30 next week.